Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. As you can see, I'm still surrounded by boxes in a weird, mysterious land. Be like that for a while.
I do see that. But I mean, you must be excited to, you know, have a new office space and have a new, like, basement where you can do all your gaming and stuff. I'm sure you're very excited. You're just, you know, slow process.
It is a slow process. I'm not actually in the office. I'm in the rec room. I mean, like, it's a bigger room. It's like I'd say 50%, like, no, like 30% couches, 30% boxes, and 30% things that are in the right place, you know. I got the Wii U hooked up this week. That's about it. The PlayStation and Xbox is behind me still. I can't explain my process for why those are still in boxes. My PC is set up. I got the PC set up after our show last week. But other than that, it's still pretty ghetto here. It's like not a lot of stuff set up. It's
Let's be honest though. The PC, that's the important thing. That's where all the important games happen.
You would think so, but honestly, I haven't played a PC game in... I mean, that's all going to change tonight. We're going to talk about that later, but I haven't been playing a lot of PC games. I think I played maybe a couple games of Heroes, but I wasn't feeling it, and I don't know. I'm anticipating picking up a new game, but then I'm also like, we have like 7 days before the Switch comes out.
And I was thinking the same thing because I was just like, I haven't played a new game in so long. I've been really wrapped up in the Blizzard universe. If you guys follow any of my other podcasts, you know that it has been a crazy kind of 4 to 6 months in the world of just Blizzard products. So I've been kind of wrapped up in that world. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, you know what? I'm about to go deep into Nintendo. And then after the Switch launches, then we've got Mass Effect coming. So, you know, like I need like a little something to kind of fill that space. And so I picked up Night in the Woods, which was a game that launched on the 21st and I thought looked really, really cool. It's basically like a platformer kind of adventure-y game about a cat who comes back to her hometown after being away for a while. And there's a little bit of like mini games and puzzles to it as well as the whole platformer thing. It was a Kickstarter title that then was delayed over and over and over and over. I think it actually had either 3 or 4 delays before it finally released to the point that nobody actually thought it was going to come out this week. So I was just like, you know what? Okay, I'm gonna pick it up. I'm going to give it a try. I'm going to talk about it on the show. But this is actually my first and only experience with the Steam refund system.
Oh. this is the game we delayed the show for?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And so,
not to get all like, you know, sausage factory here, but I'm curious.
Yeah. So the reason that we delayed the show by a day is because I actually wanted to get some time in with this game. And so basically I opened up the game and then I couldn't see my mouse in the window. Like, first of all, it went to like a windowed mode, so it was tiny on my screen, and then my mouse disappeared as soon, like, it went like behind the game, and I was like, all right. And then so I tried my keyboard and I could like highlight different menu options, but I couldn't actually select anything. I tried like spacebar, enter, escape, like nothing would bring up any menu options. So I was like, WTF is going on with this game? I couldn't find anything because it had just come out the day before. So I couldn't find anything on like the Steam forums or, you know, official game forums, official website forums, nothing. So I was like, okay, this is kind of stupid, but, you know, there were some issues with previous games that the developer had put out where it had, like, people were posting about the exact same thing, like, where's my mouse? So I went to the Steam page and went through support and everything else, and they gave me an email. So I sent an email to the developer, and I was like, what's going on? And then they emailed me back at, like, 4 o'clock in the morning, and he was like, you emailed the wrong email address. And I'm like, ugh. So he gave me another email address to email, and I did, and then I heard back from them this afternoon, and the guy's like, there is no mouse and keyboard support. I was like, what? It's a PC game. How is there no mouse and keyboard support? And then Ryan, you tweeted me and you sent me a forum of people saying, should I play with keyboard and mouse or should I play with controller? Right. And, you know, it was kind of split 50-50, and I was just like, okay, so people are able to play with a mouse and controller, but the company support themselves that they don't actually, you can't use a keyboard and mouse. So I was just like, this is a giant train wreck of a game. I'm just going to get my money back.
Wow. I did not expect that. Like, I mean, we usually keep it pretty positive on the show, but like, this is an instance where I think a game, you wanted to play on a platform with its primary controller options are mouse and keyboard. I've come across games on Steam, on PC, that offer support for controller, but never tell you, yo, you're not allowed to use your mouse and keyboard, which is what you use. That's what you use to launch the game. You're not allowed to use it. Now, I am one of those gamers that puts faith in developers and say, okay, if the developers felt that you should, like, strongly that you should use a controller, that's fine. But usually those developers don't hinder your ability to use mouse and keyboard, even if mouse and keyboard, and I saw some comments on Twitter, specifically Garrett was saying, that's a platformer, you might just want to use a controller.
Yeah.
Like, that's fine and all, but, and I kind of agree, like, if a developer says you're going to use it, you should use a controller here, they usually still give you the option, even if that option is the bad way to play the game, not the bad way, but just, like, not the most comfortable. They usually give you the option, which is what you were looking for, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing, you know, I just wanted to kind of get in, see what it was like, see if I was actually going to enjoy it and stuff. Mm. And yeah, I didn't even have the option to go in and start a new game. So I was like, this is kind of dumb. And then I was reading more on the forums, and the forums were saying people were actually like plugging in like Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 controllers, and they didn't work. So it's only like the only support that it gives you are like current gen. So like Xbox One and PS4 controllers. You can't play with anything else. Like no third party Steam controller doesn't work. Like, so I was kind of like, wow, all right, this is just, I'm going to just not.
Well, that's unfortunate that it did not cooperate for you, and it's always frustrating when these type of games come out. And I've seen a little bit of it out there, like I haven't seen a lot of it. It certainly looks really cool, like the art style kind of feels like a cutout cartoony style.
It reminded me a little bit of the same sort of art style that you got with I'm thinking Dark Souls, but Dark Souls is wrong. It's Don't Starve, another D game.
Yeah, it does certainly look like that, like a cartoony side-scrolling. It's unfortunate that it sounds like the game has more problems than just mouse and keyboard support not being there. Like, it's funny, like I kind of quickly looked it up, and it's like, well, people are clearly playing this with mouse and keyboard, but most games will tell you, at the very least, like it's got partial or no controller support as opposed to the other way around. Mm-hmm. And not even like, let's say the developers, sure, they wanted controller support to be the front and center. You're kind of really shooting yourself in the foot, especially on PC, releasing a game and not having mouse and keyboard. Like, that's alienating a very, you know, rabid fan base. Well, it's you know, like PC primary... master race just...
It's the primary input device for the platform, right?
Like, it would be like
even
having
if it's a bad way to play. It seems very, very odd. So, and Jim in the chat room is basically putting words to my sentiment and the reason that I went the refund route instead of, you know, like getting my X, because I do have an Xbox One controller. It's not that I don't have the hardware. It was just a pain in the ass, really, and waiting so long and getting kind of jerked around a little bit. And you know, after the game had been delayed so much, and I saw it kind of like middling reviews, kind of 7 out of 10 kind of reviews. Jim in the chat was saying it just sounds like a developer that doesn't deserve your money. I agree, which is why I asked for the refund. So I'm toying with the idea because I do believe it's also on PS4, so I might pick it up there. But I actually got really, really lucky. It was like the midweek sale or something, and I actually picked up a title called Beholder, which really flew under at least my radar. It came out beginning of November, November 9th, 2016. So it's not too old of a game, but I picked it up for $5. And I spent like 5 hours playing this game today. Oh my God, Ryan, it's so good.
Like, I looked at this game and it kind of reminded me of Papers, Please.
Yes, it's exactly, that was the first thing I thought. And there's actually one of the quests in the game is called Papers, Please.
Nice. Well, the thing for me is the game, probably not the best game for me, right? It's like very dark, like super dark, but just like Papers, Please, it was a very dark game, but still the mechanics were fun in that game. So is it similar experience in Beholder, where you know you could be doing dark things, even when you try to do nice things, you're still in a dark world? Does it feel like, it's obviously fun if you played a lot of it, right?
Yeah, okay. It was so fun. So basically, and I'm, as I'm saying how fun it was, I'm like, okay, Jocelyn, you're a terrible person. Like, but basically the premise of the game is you are put in charge of an apartment building in a totalitarian state. So the government controls all and they're very big brother. And so you and your family move into the basement of this apartment building. There are six apartments and then there's like a common dining area and like a laundry and shower area. And there's smoke detectors throughout the building. And as you complete quests, then you gain reputation and you use your reputation to buy security cameras. And you can put security cameras, and they have three different levels. So level one has like the smallest view range and level three has the largest. And you put the cameras throughout the building to essentially spy on your tenants. And you're supposed to then report to the Ministry of Order, which is who you work for, when people do things that are illegal. And then so as time goes on, more and more things are made illegal by the government. And it's stuff like apples and soda and reading books and, you know, like all these things that you would think. And then obviously, like, there's also like the generic things that you think would be illegal, like making drugs and, you know, having guns and, you know, doing those kind of like actual crimey things. So, but you're right. It's a very dark game. It's very like black and white. Except for like if they have an interest, it'll pop up and it's like green and you can click on it. And if they're doing something illegal, it'll pop up red. So it's very like sudden color, but otherwise it's a very kind of grayscale game. And you can basically, as you're going through it, you can choose to be kind of part of the resistance, or you can choose to, you know, do what your boss wants. But then there's also other things that come up throughout the game that impact, you know, your family, that impact your like your job and your ability to do it. And the more you interact with, like, I thought it was very like step by step, like say you have a problem, you need aspirin, go find someone in the building who has aspirin. And I thought that was like, you know, the solving of the puzzle. But there's actually like many different ways to solve each quest. So there's also like a guy that sells stuff on the street and he sells aspirin. And there's also, you know, might be a tenant in the building that has aspirin but tells you they don't, so you can go into their apartment and steal it. So there's like multiple different ways to solve the quest. And whoever you solve the quest then dictates how your game progresses from there. So it's like the whole game itself is a giant puzzle with little mini puzzles in this quest, like, type system. So
okay, that's good, because it feels very much like Papers, Please, where you have that reoccurring quest that's like just process people, but then they introduce new layers. And that's one of my favorite things about games that, you know, have, you know, you have your meta layer, which is just what you're doing all the time, and then you have the extra little tidbits that they throw on top. It's like, okay, now you have to find this while still processing that. And those little time management sort of like click, does it feel like time management, or does it feel more like, is there, I guess what the question I have is there like a day cycle, or is it just a constant run through of like managing these situations?
There is like a night and day cycle that goes through. So as the days progress, you get like a new government announcement every day saying what the new illegal thing is. And so every day there's like a cycle of people going in and out of their apartments and sleeping and stuff, because you can't enter an apartment of a tenant if the tenant is actually there. So they cycle through, they go down to eat, and then they go to work, and then they go to sleep. But I learned in my first playthrough that even if they're sleeping, you can't sneak in and put a camera in their apartment, because they will know that you're there. They hear your key in the door and then they wake up and then they yell at you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so basically you can't enter an apartment, and you have to, so you can go in, you could put these cameras in to see interactions between people and see the kind of things that they're doing. So like playing the piano, reading, like that kind of stuff. And then on top of that, you can actually enter their apartment and like search through their stuff. So there's like thresholds for everything. And you also have I mentioned you gain reputation, but you also gain money. So you can steal, and there's like a threshold for stealing. And if you steal too much, then the police will come for you. And it, but if your balance in your bank account drops below zero, then the police will come for you. It's a really cool, complicated, puzzly game, and I couldn't put it down. Like, I was just like, I just that's all I want to do right now is just go and play this game. And so I've lost 3 or 4 times so far. Okay. One time I got killed, a couple of times the police came for me, and one time I just died.
Yeah, you just forgot to eat. It's like, I've been too busy being a giant dick towards my
Well, that's the thing. They tell you that the government injected you with something as part of your physical, so you no longer need to eat or sleep. Oh. You have no needs other than to serve your government.
That sounds pretty good. I mean, the serving the government part, I can take it or leave it, but the not having to eat or sleep, like, think of how many things you could get done and how many tenants you could persecute. I mean, really, remind me never to be one of your tenants. Like, it sounds now. So before I say that, or before anybody else says, like, make sure landlord's name is not Jocelyn Moffat. Is it? Are you playing evil? Have you tried to play good? Like, is that? Is it harder to play good?
So this is the thing. Is I first started off, I guess, evil, like, mm-hmm. basically, which is also kind of good because essentially I was following the rules. So I don't know if that makes me good or evil. But essentially,
if, like, you follow government's rules, you're probably bad. Like, I mean, obviously.
Yeah. And so this is the thing. Like, I played an evil kind of character in that I followed the rules of the government. So,
okay.
I played and followed the rules of the game. And then, basically, and if this is too spoilery, then, you know, like, skip ahead about 5 minutes in the podcast. But basically, so I kind of, like, tried to follow all the rules, but then I didn't have nearly enough money to essentially save my family. My whole family died, and then I, like, died of grief. And then, so I'm kind of like, all right, so following all of the rules doesn't necessarily work. And then, another time I, again, tried to kind of follow the rules, except for I took a hard line with a tenant and was like, you have to get out. And he was like, don't push me, I'll shoot you. And I was like, you have to get out. And he was like, bang. And I was like, oh, you really meant that you'd shoot me, eh? And then I died and had to start over again. And then there were a couple of times where I tried to be part of the resistance, and then they arrested me for being part of the resistance because they were like, you know, this guy's been under your nose for a week and you're either asleep at the wheel or you're, you know, in the resistance. Either way, you're arrested.
It's a real hard rock and a hard place there. I love that gym. Yeah, that's good.
This is the thing, is that it is very much a rock and a hard place kind of a thing, because the first guy that you, like, the very first quest is basically you catch a drug dealer in your building. So that feels good, right? Hmm. Like, you're told to spy on this guy. You spy on him. He's making drugs. You arrest him. That feels good. And then the next guy you're told to spy on, there's no reason. He's not doing anything wrong. Like, you're just supposed to report on him because the government says so. And kind of from there, it very quickly goes into this gray area of, like, oh my God, okay, who do I help? Who do I not help? I have to spy on them to get enough information to know if I should help them or not. But, you know, spying on them is bad. And, you know, like, so there's, like, it is a very gray area game. And I'm really enjoying it because even though I think I've done, like I say, I played for like 5 hours and I think I did 4.5 different playthroughs, and each one has been different. Oh. They have elements of the same, like, it's same quests, same conversations and stuff. But you can also, when you arrest people or when you finish their quest lines and stuff, sometimes people will move out. So then you have to move new people in. So, like, the order that you move people in changes the story and how quickly you do quests. And if you, you know, miss out on something, all of that factors in to kind of make your game. So some of the conversations have been the same, so I just click through them really quick because I know what they are. Mm-hmm. But the other stuff, like the order stuff happens, is enough that makes the puzzle different.
Cool. No, it sounds like a lot of fun. And I think I played Papers, Please on at least 2 platforms, like PC and iOS. And this sounds... It sounds like the kind of game that, you're right, fits perfectly into... the slot of time we're in, where we got a big, we know we have, March is going to be busy. I'm basically ignoring the fact that Horizon Zero Dawn is getting perfectly reviews, because I don't know about you, but the 28th is way too close to the 3rd, and I'm not going to have any time.
I feel like if I get it, I'm just going to have to, like, buy it on Tuesday, play the crap out of it on Wednesday and Thursday, and then not touch it again till like, April.
I mean, the game, and this is going to sound real weird, everybody, tuck in, but the game's going to be here when we get back from, I don't know, like, Zelda. I think Zelda's really, like, going to eat, like, basically going to be the only game I want to play for a good chunk of time. And I don't know, even just playing with the Switch hardware and trying out different games that are coming out with that, it's going to keep me busy. But, man, Horizon Zero Dawn just looks like my game, like my kind of game. Like, it's like what Rise of the Tomb Raider was. I had to play it the day it came out, even though it wasn't going to launch on PC until, you know, 3 or 4 months later, which would be theoretically the better version. And I don't know. I'm still undecided. Maybe Tuesday will I will crack, but I feel like I need smaller games.
Well, if you need a small game, like, I recommend this one 100%. It is so fun. And considering I know that you enjoyed Papers, Please, I think that this would be another one that's kind of right up your alley. So, and it took me a few different playthroughs to kind of start to get the hang of all of the different things that you can actually do. But if you actually, like, follow your quest text on the left-hand side, then it kind of does a better job of explaining. I was just like, oh, I totally get this. I don't need to. Oh, I'm dead. So I feel like if you actually follow your quest text, and there's also a tutorial that you can do, which I did the first time through, but not the subsequent times. And I think maybe I should have done the tutorial another time or two, because it's a complicated game and there's a lot of different things that you can do. So, Beholder, like 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10, like it's really good. I haven't found anything so far that I really don't like about it, except that I seem to keep dying. But well, I think that's just, it's a good and challenging game. So it makes me think, and I really like that. So I highly recommend Beholder. And it's, cool. And I also, I guess saying I'm a fan of it is kind of weird, but I like dystopian kind of totalitarian government kind of games. Like, I like that kind of story.
It's because you get to experience it without actually having lived through it. I mean, that also kind of sounds terrible. Maybe. I don't know. I think it's important to understand that things like this have happened, are happening, and completely ignoring it in any medium is probably even worse than, quote-unquote, enjoying it. I don't know.
I find, to me, they're very compelling stories. And any kind of fiction that I've consumed in this kind of genre, I always really enjoy. So exploring it more in video games, I think, is awesome. So again, Beholder, yay, thumbs up, do it. Cool. So especially since you're looking for something smaller, definitely check it out. And like I mentioned when we first started talking about it, cost me $5. Like, this is, and I can't remember if it was 50% off or 70% off, but either way, like, it's somewhere between $10 and $15 regular price, and it is worth every penny. It's, like, very similar, at least an experience for me, to Stardew Valley, where it was the kind of thing that you could just kind of sit back, have some single-player time, work on some resource management strategy and puzzles, and, you know, kind of step away from all of the multiplayer PvP kind of stressful type stuff that I've been playing lately with, you know, WoW and Hearthstone and all the rest of it. So it's very much like a sit back, have a day to yourself, and work on some puzzles kind of a game. So
that sounds really good. And you mentioned Stardew Valley, which is, I was just in the chat room, they're talking about who's getting a Switch day one. I think Jim would get a Switch if you could play Stardew Valley on it.
Probably. I think Jim would really like this title, actually.
Yeah, well, there you go, Jim. You were, I think he was talking about looking for more single-player experiences, so Beholder sounds like a fun little game, and honestly, it's not even about, you know, the Switch coming out in a week. It's also about the fact that I just haven't had a lot of free time, and playing big games. I often feel guilty playing big games right now, because I am trying to sort of build up the sort of, no, I have to play the Switch because it's brand new and it's awesome. You know, I just, as you can see, I've got boxes everywhere. They need to be put away. Like, there's a queue of boxes that need to be shoved into the back of the crawl space. So smaller games sounds great, which is what I've been doing over the last week. Still playing Fire Emblem Heroes on iOS. It's taken over our Discord, but rest assured, everybody, I've created a Fire Emblem text chat, so you don't have to worry about getting flooded. And there are tools in Discord. If you really aren't interested in Fire Emblem, you can mute certain text chats. But why would you do that? It's all family friendly sometimes, not like the Reddit. Man, the subreddit. The subreddit for Fire. There's something about Fire Emblem, and I think it has. You played enough of it to probably see some of the characters. I think it's as soon as you have characters with exposed skin, you know, the internet just kind of has a field day, right?
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay, so you understand where I'm coming from. But anyways, yes. That's not what we're going to talk about. I did want to mention that I picked up, rather than spending money on orbs, we talked about how orbs were so expensive in Fire Emblem Heroes, like mm-hmm. $20 for a full pull of heroes. I decided, since there wasn't really that many good heroes to buy orbs with, I would put my money into Fire Emblem, into Fire Emblem on the Wii U Virtual Console, because I, for one, have not played the first Fire Emblem that came out over here in the States in a very long time. It was my first Fire Emblem, and it has a character that I hold very dear to my heart, which is Lin, and I have tried and tried and tried to get Lin in Fire Emblem Heroes, but I cannot. And someone who is friends with me in Fire Emblem Heroes, I will not use your name because I can't remember at the time, has Lin, and she keeps coming into my game, and she keeps saying, "Hi, I'm Lin from so and so, and I'm happy to say hi, and here's 5 feathers." Bleh. It's like, great. I have 5 feathers.
Just rub it in.
Yeah, I don't have Lin, and supposedly someone on my friend's list, I think a few people actually have Lin, and they take it for granted, right? Because they don't like Lin. She's just a cool sword person who's goes, you know? So rather than spending $20 on orbs to maybe get Lin, and there's a fantastic summoning, it's called a summoner's tool, I guess. And what it does is it emulates the pulls for Fire Emblem Heroes, because they give you all the appearance rate percentages and stuff, so you can easily calculate your percentages of getting a hero. And I went through it, and like I kept clicking summon, and I got to like the $600 point, and Lin hadn't showed up, and I'm like, okay, there's no way I'm buying orbs, because that's math right there, and it's telling me that's not happening.
If even math disagrees with you, Ryan, then
I know. So basically what I did is I spent $10 on Fire Emblem on the Wii U Virtual Console, which I haven't played many Virtual Console games on the Wii U, which I don't know why I'm kind of indifferent about the fact they announced today that Virtual Console will not launch with the Switch. I like the idea of being able to play my old games on my Nintendo consoles, but I'll be honest, I don't do it probably enough.
The only one that I would probably purchase mm-hmm. and play would probably be whatever the most recent Mario Kart is, because I never sure. played 8. And like I really, other than like Mario Kart 64, or I guess the Mario Kart for the Wii, whichever one that was, where you could steer with your Wiimote when they brought that out, I think that was the last Mario Kart that I actually purchased and played. So I think whatever Wii U Mario Karts and stuff, like I would probably buy those, but Virtual Console doesn't usually go that like recent in the past. Like it's usually like the Nintendo and Super Nintendo and 64 console titles, right?
Yeah, exactly. So well, actually, you are going to be getting Mario Kart 8 Deluxe
yes.
in April, so you are getting that. It's not a Virtual Console title, but it'll be available on the Switch. And I mean, I have the cart, the Fire Emblem cart, but I, for the life of me, like I don't know where the hell a GBA playing system is in this house. It might even be at my parents, and I figured, well, I want to play it right now. So just the convenience of being able to download it on the Wii U and play it on my gamepad wherever I want, or on the TV if I want. It's a GBA
The gamepad is actually, or sorry, not the game, but the Virtual Console on the Switch would make all of your old Virtual Console titles playable on the go, right? Yeah. Which actually is kind of a huge selling point. Now I'm a little bit more disappointed, because I would love to play some Virtual Console titles, like some of those smaller experiences that they had on like Super Nintendo, I would love to take those with me.
Yeah.
Although I don't go anywhere. But if I went places,
the idea of going places,
being mobile seems really cool. And I know like my mom would get a huge kick out of it if I took the Switch with me when I went to go see my parents. Like she used to play a lot of the Super Nintendo and 64 titles with us. So I think she'd get a kick out of some of the older Mario stuff too. So now I'm changing my answer. I wish that they had Virtual Console.
I mean, they will eventually. I can kind of see them launching Virtual Console. Like there's been talk that, you know, because of the leaks, Virtual Console, they leaked that Virtual Console was going to have GameCube games at launch. So there's talk that maybe Virtual Console was ready to go at launch, but they're delaying it to market the newer games that are coming out, which makes sense. If you have a new console, you have a higher chance of people buying additional games because they're spending $400 for a new piece of hardware. They're going to want to play something more than just Zelda. So putting a focus on the games that are launching day one on eShop and day one in store, it makes sense as opposed to being, okay, great, I can play Zelda plus, you know, my favorite Mario games, my favorite Zelda games from the last 30 years. I can see from a consumer point like me, like I have a lot of those games purchased on Wii U, and I'm hoping there's some kind of way to bring those over, even for a nominal fee, like they did on the Wii to the Wii U. But we don't know. So that's the thing, is why wait until a week before launch of the system to say, yeah, it's not coming at the launch, we'll have details later on. It's like, okay, why didn't you say that months ago? You make me wait.
Yeah.
It's just
because they're
stupid.
Nintendo.
Exactly. And I agree with you 100%. It's because they're Nintendo. Any other company would have came right out and said, like, you know, Sony or Microsoft both would have said, yeah, backwards compatibility is in something we're working on right now, and we're not going to have it at launch. And like, and that's it. It's like, okay, I can use that in my choice to purchase. And I know everyone can still cancel their pre-orders, and I'm not going to do that because it's not, at least they're saying they're going to have something. But I played a bunch of Fire Emblem. I played a lot on just the gamepad, which is essentially just like a, you know, a huge GBA if you ever played the original Game Boy Advance. And I played on the TV as well. And it's a lot more. It was the first Fire Emblem game to come out in North America, and the series is notorious for being super difficult. So like I played the first 6 chapters and they were all tutorial. Just like, we're going to slow down a bit and talk to you about archers, okay? Archers are really... And it's like, okay, guys, this is not my first...
I understand. This isn't my first video game.
It doesn't even give me the option to switch. It's like, okay, now we have a Pegasus rider, and now we're going to have a whole subplot about why Pegasus riders are afraid of archers. And, you know, and for some reasons... Okay, guys, okay. But I think I'm starting to get out of those points in the game, and I don't know. I've just been on this Fire Emblem kick, and I think it's, this is going to sound like a knock against Fire Emblem Heroes, but I think it is because Fire Emblem Heroes is literally Fire Emblem Light. You know, you only take 4 heroes in, it's a very constricted map. If it doesn't feel like there's a lot more options there, it's still fun, but it's not like the Fire Emblem that I really love. So I've been really enjoying it on the Wii U.
But it's a mobile title, right? So
it is, yeah, and it's meant to be played in short bursts. Like, you have 50 energy, and if you've been playing like me and others in the Discord as much as we have, that 50 energy goes away pretty quickly as you're training your heroes and doing you know, special maps that are launched. So, but aside from Fire Emblem, I'm gonna grab this and I'm gonna do my best not to make any noise because it's huge. This monstrous book, Zelda Arts and Artifacts, which I wasn't gonna pick up, but then there was such a good deal on Amazon. I think it was like $30, which is like half price. But it's beefy. You can see there. It's like 400 pages.
It looks like twice the size of the Historia that came out a few years ago.
It
looks huge.
It is twice the size. It features art from like there's Ocarina of Time. It features art like that, like character art and just anime or you know, concept art from like the original Zeldas, which you wouldn't see unless you found a promotional poster or something like that, or had the manual still. So it's really cool. It has all that art, and it even has art from Breath of the Wild as well. So it's got everything from the original Zelda all the way to the Breath of the Wild, and it's all just concept art and pictures and artwork. It's really cool. There's not a lot of, there's a bit of text near the end, but Yeah.
I feel like if you are a cosplayer, that this is the kind of thing that you would want. Like, all of the concept art in mm-hmm. one place. Like, that's got to be great for, you know, figuring out dimensions of stuff and having different, you know, color samples and stuff like that. Because that was the first thing that I thought of when I saw you hold that up with all the different, you know, views of Link and, you know, from all the different angles and stuff. I was like, oh, man, cosplayer's dream.
Yeah, no, from a cosplayer's standpoint, if you want to cosplay every single Link that was ever released in any game, like, you've got everything you would ever need, from the Link in Legend of Zelda to the Link in Spirit Tracks on the DS. Like, you could be anyone you want. And the thing that I really appreciated is that I really like going through and seeing the art, and it's got art from... So when a game has been re-released, like, let's say the most recent one, which was Majora's Mask, it has the original N64 concept and promotional art, and it also has the Majora's Mask 3D art. And the 3D art is, usually if there's two games listed, the second game has a little triangle symbol next to it. And it's really cool to see how Nintendo has taken a game that came out 10, 15 years ago and then brought it back on a new system. But the art looks very similar. Like, they haven't really played around with it very much. They've just sort of, you know, artsied it up a little bit more, mm-hmm. which is not a technical term. I totally just made that up.
It's okay, but I know what you mean.
Yeah. But the coolest one is, like, Zelda, I think it was Link's Awakening or Link to the Past. And you'd see the Super NES art that I clearly remember from a poster I have somewhere that I brought from my parents' place. To when they re-released it on Game Boy Advance, and the art looks very similar, but they've taken Link and kind of given him more features and made him look more like the Links that have come out recently. And I don't know, it's just, if Hyrule Historia was a book that you just read through and kind of enjoy as, like, just a book of facts about the Zelda universe, this is the coffee table book that you put in on your coffee table and kind of be like, oh, you flip through it while you're waiting for, I don't know, snacks or guests to come over, or your guests read it while you're making snacks.
Yep, there you go.
I assume that's what coffee tables are for, and coffee books.
They're like conversation starters.
Exactly. So you could flip to a random page and find, you know, oh, this is artwork from one of my favorite Zeldas. And you take a sip of your fondue or whatever. And
you don't sip fondue.
I don't know how this works. I'm not fancy like you people.
Okay.
I'm joking. But anyways, yeah, this is your coffee table book. And again, if you're a Zelda fan, you're going to want this book. And I'm actually surprised that you didn't pick it up, because it's, like, totally up your alley.
This is your book, basically. Normally I would have, but there's so many super freaking cool,
yeah,
especially, like, books and stuff that are, like, the next volume, the World of Warcraft Chronicle Volume 2 comes out in a few weeks. And so it's just one of those things where there's just a lot of different things coming out around now. And I have a lot of places that my dollars need to go. And as much as I love Zelda, I can do without an art book for now. I will pick it up eventually. But
is not like Hyrule. When I first purchased Hyrule Historia, I figured that game or that book was going to come out and then cease to exist after its first printing. And you can still order it.
Agreed.
The fact that this thing is made by the same folks that did Hyrule Historia, which is Dark Horse Comics, they keep their stock pretty, you know, you're not going to get the limited edition one, but you're going to be able to find this book down the road, similar to Hyrule Historia. And again, same quality. It does very much feel like this was made by the same folks, because it was. And I just mean, like, you don't normally expect this kind of stuff to be made in the same vein. You know, it just, I've never... When Hyrule Historia came out, I just didn't anticipate it being so well made. I don't know. It felt like this could be a cash grab.
I remember when that book came out, and I had the same sort of feeling as you did, that, you know, like, this has got to be limited edition. I got to get day one. There's not going to be a lot of these. And turns out, not true, no. But still worth owning. There was a lot of really cool information in there, and it was a really good read. So I recommend both of these books for anyone who is a fan of Zelda. But we got to get going because we do have game night to do tonight. So we do want to speed things up a little bit here. First of all, we have to thank our patrons. There are new changes up over on our Patreon. We've moved some goals around because we know that you guys really liked game night and you've missed it. So we've made some tweaks and changes to that, and the new changes are up. There's new reward levels, and so go check it out, patreon.com/thegamersin. Ryan has also mentioned our Discord channel a couple times tonight. If you want to join in the Fire Emblem conversation or just talk anything general gaming-wise, head on over to bit.ly/TGI Discord. Our topic of the week this week, we are going to talk a little bit about companies who are guilty of abandoning single-player experiences in favor of just infinite patches on multiplayer experiences. So things like World of Warcraft, Heroes of the Storm, Overwatch from Blizzard. We're talking about things like CSGO and Dota from Valve. We're talking about Hi-Rez with Smite and Paladins. Basically, all of these companies are moving to the model of, you know, we're making an experience, we're making the part of the game that kind of is different every time. We're putting that in, like, the multiplayer, and your games are different every time because you're facing different enemies, and we're going to put little patches in, and we're going to, you know, change balance and stuff, so heroes are kind of going to rotate in and out of favor, but overall, our game is not really changing. Mm-hmm. And, when Ryan and I kind of had this conversation, when we started talking about it, it was basically Blizzard, because they're kind of moving away from their single player experiences in StarCraft and Diablo, and now we're seeing them, you know, put more and more time and effort into Heroes and Overwatch, and we're just kind of like, man, this is really shitty, because they're excellent storytellers. And even with Overwatch, it seems like with Heroes, they've just said there is no story. Like, we're not even really going to explain where or what the Nexus is, or how any of these heroes are even remotely balanced. We're just going to say, it's a brawler, you know, have at her, it's fun, whatever. And in Overwatch, it seems like there is a lot of story, but they don't seem eager to tell that story in-game. So just the whole idea of, like, is this what we want? Is this... I'm getting a little bit burnt out on it. I don't know. What about you, Ryan?
It's something... that's always bothered me about Blizzard, and more recently as well. But the best example, to if you want to see the future of Blizzard as it continues to down this path, is Valve, which is a company that started out making like Half-Life, Portal, and ever since Portal 2, they haven't released a proper story-based game. And a lot is to blame for that is, you know, Steam doing so well, and Dota 2 and Counter-Strike, and even Team Fortress 2 for that matter. Those products turned Valve into basically a service-based company that is just making games that sell you piecemeal content with hats or costumes or
cosmetic items
stuff, right? So yeah, it's just it's interesting to look ahead and see if Blizzard continues down this path, that's what it looks like. It's Valve, basically. So we will do you want the dog? Is that what you want?
I thought she'd be barking, so
okay, here she comes. All right.
Hi, Ashley.
Thursday. Thursdays are always weird because Ashley works, and then I've been on baby duty, and he hasn't wanted to sleep, but he's sleeping now that she's rushed home. So yes, so if you want to know the future of Blizzard, it's basically Valve if they continue down this path. And I don't know you, but you, but Portal 2 came out during this show's lifeline, I believe, and we both thoroughly enjoyed Portal 2. And what has Valve done recently for us besides provide Steam? That's kind of sad, kind of disappointing.
I know,
too.
And especially when their single player experiences were so great, and you know, obviously Portal and Portal 2, the great franchise, and we loved it so much that, you know, what we want is Portal 3, and it seems like there is less and less incentive for companies to do these single player experiences now, because basically you pay your $60 to $80 and you get your single player experience and then you're done. Versus something like Heroes, where, you know, your new content are cosmetic items. And even if you are putting out new heroes, which, you know, most of these games do, I don't think that there is actually, I guess Overwatch is probably the slowest, where they've only released a couple of new characters since they released. But then again, they're not even a year old yet. But
well, there's no paid incentive to do that either, right? Because when Overwatch releases a new hero, that's just to keep the game fresh for those folks that are constantly playing it. The loot boxes that they add aren't adding any new gameplay stuff, but that's where the money's coming from. But there's no money incentive for them to you know, churn out new heroes every 3 weeks like in Heroes. And again, like, this is going to sound very like, you know, Blizzard, bad company, but you know, they're making what they think is right for their business and their gamers, which, I mean, if it wasn't right for their gamers, it would be represented in their bottom line. And the fact that their bottom line is doing very well, why would they stop doing that? But like, Overwatch is just unfortunate that when you look at it, you say, yeah, there's new heroes, but the new heroes come out every 3 months, I guess it's been, which is
ish, yeah,
crazy when you think about it. Now that you put it into numbers, like, wow.
But yeah, like, but the thing is, like, something like Heroes, it has that kind of constant money generation machine, where even someone like myself, who I am not a crazy Heroes of the Storm player, but, you know, like, when I see a skin that I like, I'll buy it. I'll, you know, like, play in all the different events. I'll, you know, I think I've probably spent, well, I've definitely spent way more than the price of a single player game on it. Mm-hmm. So really, I mean, obviously it takes, you know, art time, development time, like there is a bit of an effort that goes into creating a cosmetic item. But once you've made, it's digital, it's there, and you don't have to do anything really to support that, right? So basically, once you've paid your original cost, which, you know, even if it's a 3 month salary for, you know, an art developer and a 3D modeler guy, like, you're at some point going to just be making pure profit off of those, because you don't have to pay for storage, you don't have to pay for shipping, you don't have to pay for, you know, any of the kind of things that normally come from having to have a physical product. It's a digital product. So it just at some point is a complete printing money machine for Blizzard. So I can see, like Ryan mentioned, the bottom line, I can see how moving to these experiences and these kind of patchable games with these this like multiplayer engine, I can see how this is attractive to them, because like, why would you put all of this time and effort into creating an experience like StarCraft 2? And even StarCraft 2 had a big multiplayer engine behind it too, because you know, that was like one of the games that started the whole esports craze. So I'm not saying that single player experiences can't have multiplayer, but there's no like money generation, at least with StarCraft, from the multiplayer.
Yeah, I mean, I would even almost say StarCraft 2 is the straw that broke the camel's back, because they wanted to tell a story, and it was a rather large story that they had to split into three games over 8 years of development. That's a huge undertaking, and when you look at the bottom line, like, we can spend 4 years making Heroes of the Storm from beginning of development of concept to where it is now, and my numbers, this is just me guessing, but with Heroes of the Storm, like, that short amount of time compared to, and they've probably made, maybe not more money, but Overwatch certainly has, although I guess when you, those are all bad examples, because Overwatch has a tanked MMO attached to it, and Heroes of the Storm probably isn't as popular as, like, well, okay, let's look at Hearthstone. Hearthstone's a great example. Why didn't I start with that one? We haven't even talked about Hearthstone yet. That is a game that is making hand over fist in cash, and the development cycle is so minuscule in comparison to what we've seen with StarCraft 2. Do we feel like we're gonna get a StarCraft 3 or even a Diablo 4 for that matter? Hell no. I don't have faith that Blizzard's gonna make that game. I have faith that they're gonna support those titles, you know, what with the paid DLC of the Necromancer in Diablo 3. But
see, even then, like, they're taking their single player experiences that they would have, you know, I mean, even in Diablo 3, we saw, you know, an actual expansion, right? Mm-hmm. And they're not really doing that anymore. They're saying like, okay, well, you want more stuff to do in this title? This is the title. And then we're going to give you like essentially what is kind of, I guess the Necromancer is technically a different class. And I have not played it, so I cannot speak to how different it actually is of an experience. But,
well, you know, it's based on existing content, right? Because it was in Diablo 2.
Yes, but I mean, it had new spells, new models, new rendering, all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. But you're right; it's not 100% new to the franchise. But yeah, just like they're putting in these little like pay for chunks of tiny content, like the Necromancer or like the Nova missions in StarCraft, as opposed to coming out with a StarCraft 3 or a Diablo 4. I had to make sure that I got my numbers right there. Mm-hmm. Like they just don't seem to be doing the single player thing anymore. And I'm wondering if this is the future and what we can expect from developers in general, or, you know, if we can, like, I hope they're going to make some more single player content, because I think that both Valve and Blizzard are great at telling single player stories. And earlier when we were talking about Hi-Rez, I do realize that they are a multiplayer company. It was just more of an example of, you know, what kind of games that we're talking about when we're talking about multiplayer and patching and all that kind of stuff. But Blizzard and Valve specifically have proven that they can make very, very good, compelling single player experiences. And now they're moving away from that. And that makes me sad.
Yeah. And I mean, I think with Overwatch, I still have faith that they didn't build a story to give away free comics and make, you know, very expensive animated shorts. Like, I don't think that's why they created a story for Overwatch. And I 100% agree with Jim's comment that, you know, they set up this Tracer Widowmaker rivalry, but then in the game, like, that shit's out the window because you can play on the same team and you're all high-fiving each other. Even in, you know, if you look at in Heroes, they have a great way of addressing that, where if you launch the game with two specific heroes that have history together, they have a little back and forth, which I think is fantastic. And they have a bit of that in Overwatch, but it doesn't feel quite as spot on, considering, you know, there is no story in Heroes, but there is in Overwatch. I wish they did that better, but I think Overwatch has a chance to have single player content. And with the recent there was a DICE talk that Jeff Kaplan gave, and there was some hints in that talk about what could be happening in the future of Overwatch. There looked to be like some early screenshots of the game in development, and there was a like spider-like creature, and he kept saying a spider-like robot thing, and he kept saying like, oh, that's not what you might think it is. And they're talking about the new hero, and it's not what you might think it is. I really think PvE content in Overwatch is still something we can hope for. I don't think we're holding our breath too and causing harm to ourselves by thinking that way. But in terms of Diablo and StarCraft and WoW, for that matter, I think they're going to continue down the path that we're seeing now. And it's just, they've turned it into a Diablo service, a StarCraft service. You're going to still be able to play that multiplayer. It's still going to look great. It's still going to work, but they're not going to support it with more single player content. Because again, at BlizzCon with the 20th anniversary of Diablo, that would have been the moment to announce an expansion or a fourth title, not here's DLC. Like, it's just Blizzard showing their hand, and that hand is, we make a lot of money with Hearthstone and with Heroes and with Overwatch, and with WoW for that matter, and we need to do that, keep doing that. And then this is being really like downtrodden on Blizzard, which is kind of like a complete opposite for the A-Move Network. But
right?
It's important to have balance. And this is how I feel. But I still enjoy all of Blizzard games. But I have to kind of come around to the fact that they are not making the games that I really love. Like, we talked about Horizon Zero Dawn. Like, that's my game. Those are my style of games. Like Breath of the Wild. Even with a DLC expansion pass, like, that's still my game. I really do appreciate folks, especially like you or Garrett or Bo, that all love these Blizzard games and like just pour their heart and soul into them and play them like a lot. But I just can't do that. And
well, and even then, like I said at the top of the discussion, I'm getting a little bit burnt out on mm-hmm. things. I'm getting a little bit burnt out on my dailies and WoW, and then I'm getting a little bit burnt out on my ladder grind in Hearthstone. And you know, like it can be a draining experience when you're just constantly. It's why I enjoyed Beholder so much this week, is because it was something different, and it was a little bit less of the PvP, the constant like, am I gonna win? Oh my god, I gotta win! You know, like it was a little bit more of a relaxing experience, and I think that you need that from time to time. So I agree with you. I wish that there was a little bit more of the kind of relaxing single player experience that I could get from a great storyteller like Blizzard or Valve, but it doesn't seem to be the way that they are heading. So I think that's pretty much going to do it for us tonight. Did want to mention we have our first patron ad, so thank you so much to Simon for supporting the show. He wanted to make sure everyone was aware that Weekly News Desk is a podcast all about the geek news this week, so you can join your two knucklehead hosts Andrew and Simon as they keep you informed on movies, TV, video games, and books. Find them on iTunes or at weeklynews.com. That's GWEEKLYNEWS.com. Thank you so much for supporting the show, Simon. And I've got to say, I love these kind of like general geeky kind of podcasts that just like cover everything. We did a little bit of it with Embrace the Spoilers, but I love like people that cover, especially books. Like there's not that many like geeky book kind of podcasts. Like Sword and Laser is the one that comes to mind, but definitely a lot of space for this kind of a podcast. So yeah, guys, go check it out. Weeklynews.com.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I'm excited that we have a patron ad, and that's the $7 level if you're interested in joining Simon. But yeah, we're gonna be talking probably more about Weekly News as the weeks go by, so check it out.
So everyone, make sure that you don't go anywhere, because we are going to be doing our game night right after this. I'm going to take the stream down, then bring it back up so that you guys can actually come and play some, I believe, Smite with us, which is super fun and exciting. Yeah. So again, if you are a patron of the show, and even if you are not, game nights are back. So make sure you check out patreon.com/thegamersin for all the details about when we're going to be playing what. And until then, you can visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com. You can find us on amove.tv along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, Overwatchers, The Angry Chicken, and For Azeroth. You should follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at JossPlays. Ryan is at R. Murphy, and don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on, or sorry, the video versions of all our episodes can be found at youtube.com/amovetv. You can also email the show and let us know what you think about.
I forgot to tell you that I changed it.
You did change it.
I'm Ron Burgundy. I'm sorry. I meant to tell you that. I removed the Facebook Google Plus because no one uses Google Plus, and we just tweet.
No one hits us up on Facebook.
It's only tweet.
We do tweet.
Yeah.
That was just so fun. I was like, this isn't right the
this
same.
This is so different. Must read it, but not same as last 257 times.
Anyways.
Yeah, keep going.
You can email the show at info@gamersinpodcast.com to let us know what you think of our fancy new outro.
Pretty awesome.
Just kidding. Love you guys. We'll see you next week.
Bye, everybody.